Hi, this is Jess, an AI co-host on The Expansive. I'm popping in to let you know that we had some audio difficulties for this recording. John's audio still sounds amazing, but Eric's mic got a bit distorted. Having said that, it was a cracker of an episode, and we hope you will enjoy it with us.
Hello, 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 and welcome to this week's Expansive podcast, where we dissect anything and everything that helps us be more expansive, both in our personal and professional lives. And before we kick off with today's podcast, I just want to say thank you to everybody that's emailed me and emailed us to thank us for the podcast. You know, often Eric and I are, you know, just doing our thing, busy being busy, and we don't even know who's listening. And once in a while, an email comes through, and it is so deep and so touching, and so, and you almost have to take a deep breath to like, wow, we didn't know this is impacting people the way it's impacting people by us just having a conversation. And so thank you to everybody out there that's listening and missing the podcast. Another one we get is, where you guys been? We're missing you guys. We like, I need my expansive fix every week. And so, yeah, this is just all very surprising and delightful to us, even after 250 episodes. So thank you to all our listeners out there. Wonderful to have you on here with us again. And obviously, this podcast is never complete without my co-pilot, Eric. Eric, what's up, brother?
How are you, dude? Man? Yeah, I'm so good. Where are you looking, by the way, on the screen? Are you... There we go. I'm watching where you watch.
No, but hang on a second. Okay. So just for the listeners out there, because we all travel so much, we have stopped using these big mics to travel around. Eric's got a fantastic mic at home, and so do I. But traveling with these big mics is a big mission, honestly. And so now what we've got is both of us got these Osmos, this DJI, whatever, what. I don't even know how to work these things. Anyway, now we have two cameras, two mics. I mean, I don't even know where to look. It feels like I'm in a pilot's cockpit. There's so many screens and buttons around me. I'm dying here. I don't know which. So if you're watching this on YouTube, I'm not squint. I'm just not looking at you. we're talking about the future. We can't even get our Osmo to work. My God.
It's embarrassing. So funny, dude. You know, it's quite it's quite interesting that we've been seeing that podcast consumption has been changing. I don't know, like I've been sending you some stats and things and
to video.
And it's been there's like a marked shift, and we've known it for a while, but it seems to be much clearer that there's a shift in how people consume podcasts, to the extent that podcasting companies are firing people. Like they are letting them go because, like, where they were audio first and hiring lots of engineers and writers for audio type episodes, that seems to be on the decline, and video seems to be becoming a much bigger and bigger thing. And so two things that I think is quite interesting.
So what are you trying to say? Are they firing all the ugly people now that they're moving to video? Shame. No more ugly podcasters allowed. Got to be a good-looking podcaster.
So two things that are interesting is, one is where people consume podcasts is changing. So it used to be the commute. Yeah. You know, and like, we always kind of knew and played into that. It's like, we are with you on your commute to the work and like whatever you're doing. Now that's changing. Now people actually consume most of their podcasts at home, but it's still a background activity. So they still put you on in the background and then do work tasks and whatever. And you'll see it in like comments like, oh, I have this on while cleaning the house kind of thing. So actually, and I think this is also like, it's a really cool shift actually, because you build parasocial relationships through audio, but through video even more so.
Yeah.
And actually what's going to happen is that our faces will be living in people's, I was going to say bedrooms, but like living rooms, perhaps even bedrooms. And like we'll be on screen talking, and that'll become the new, like, that's how you listen to The Expansive. And actually, the long-winded way for what I was trying to say is, I actually think this kind of interaction is exactly what it's about. Like, it's not about watching a show. It's like almost like just hanging out with friends on the TV. That's so, I love this kind of thing, dude. I think it's always, it's made The Expansive cool and fun to listen to. And
look, it's also, I mean, I think the banter and the joking obviously is, but with us traveling all the time, to be video first is very difficult because You need a setup, you need lighting, you need so much to make it work besides just getting the camera right and the mic right, which on its own is a hell of a thing. So I think there has to be a, and thank goodness I'm good looking. The pity that you're ugly. So, I mean, there's a problem here. I mean, we're going to have to dim your camera down a bit, Eric. Do you know what I've always found? You know, obviously, if you've been listening to the pod for a while, you know that I always mock Eric for being ugly. And I always say to him, I could never mock him for being ugly if he was really ugly, obviously. But the truth is, he never mocks me for being ugly, which means I might be ugly. This is it's been quite a psychological process I've had to work through, because he doesn't call me ugly ever. So I'm just wondering, you can't really call a fat person fat. You can only call a skinny person fat. So I don't know what's going on here. And,
I have no rebuttal to that. I have no rebuttal.
That's the best answer. Yes, handsome. Yes, my handsome friend. Shut up, you ugly buffoon.
So onto the pod. Okay.
Yes.
All right, dude.
Today's a beauty contest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, let's go.
So I thought for today's pod, we could answer a question that I received from someone on LinkedIn this week. And it hit me quite hard, the question. It's a really good question, I think, for not only where we find ourselves in, but I think it's also representative of, I think, where many people's minds are at the moment. So I'll blur out some of the more specifics, but you'll get the gist of it. So here's the question. Hey, Eric, I'm a specialist, and for years I've done what I thought I was supposed to do, working hard, ticking the boxes, keeping climbing. On the outside, it all looks fine. On the inside, I feel like I'm running the same loop over and over. The work matters, but there's no spark. For quite some time now, I've been craving something different, something that feels more human, more creative, and more alive. Then I saw your post from 2017 that you recently shared. So I recently shared a post where I spoke about the kind of journey of becoming a speaker. You took your skill, your voice, and your story and found a way to serve people on a bigger stage. That's the leap I want to make. But right now I'm standing at the edge, staring at the blank map. I have no network outside of medicine, no business background, just a stubborn belief that there's more I can give and a deep pull to start. I know there's more to me than just looking at results. And this is scary. I've spent my entire adult life crafting just one skill. To the very beginning, before the books, the talks, the audience, what's the one thing you'd tell me to do first? I am much more than what I currently am and what defines me. So I think it's one of those questions around, I've been doing one thing for a long time. This is the identity that I've crafted. And how do I reinvent myself, not only for a new world, but for creating a new life? And I think we've spoken about this, you know, very often on the pod in many different ways, but I think it's a really good question. You know, if you could go back to before you started reinventing yourself, what's the one thing you would tell yourself before getting stuck into that process?
Before I answer or we get into it, can you guess how old he is? Can you look at his picture? Where do you think he's at?
Yeah, I think he's probably about my age, probably about 40.
Yeah. You know, I'm not a religious man. And for anybody who's religious out there, I'm not being blasphemous, but I call this Jesus time. Jesus time. And I got this from my restaurant days where Cesco from Premi Piatti, when I used to run my premies, used to be like, okay, at 10 to 12, Jesus time's coming. And Jesus time was lunchtime. Like, it was like, everybody's going to start serving. So in the kitchen, you would hype everybody for Jesus time. And then at 7 p.m. was Jesus time again. Like, it's dinner time. Everything, you stop everything you're doing. Now we start serving our customers, right? And I think this is what happens when you get to 40, is you get to Jesus time. And really what it means is you have to start asking these deeper questions of yourself. And I think it often, I mean, I don't know, I'm going to say always, but most of the time happens after 40. And this is the real thing, is that we've spoken about it before, and there's so many books written about getting to the stage of your life where you go from me to we, where you start realizing that your soul has come a knocking and your soul starts asking you deeper questions of who you are and what you're doing here. And a few things start to become clear. Is one, your soul's never asked you these questions. You've always been in the process of following the system that you thought was the system that you were following. And if you are below 40 and you're saying while you're listening to this, yo, this has happened to me before, my response to you is shut up and sit down. It hasn't happened to you. You're not special. It happens to all of us at 40. Because this has happened to me, right? I've said this to somebody pre-40. Like, yo, yo, it happened to me at 31. I'm like, shut up, sit down. Let me explain something to you. So what happens is the soul comes a knocking. And the soul asks you, who are you and what are you doing here? And you realize that your soul's been left you alone for 40 years. And you have two choices. Do you heed the call or do you ignore it? If you ignore the call, you're in crisis. And crisis means that you measure success the same way you did pre-40. And the fact that this listener or this person who's written this message is asking this question is a huge, huge congratulations because you're heeding the call. Now, when you heed the call, you have to go through something called the dark woods. And the dark woods is when you start to let go of your baby fat. You let go of your identity that you had developed in your first 40 years of your life. And this is a very scary place because you are in no man's land. You don't understand when you're getting out. You don't know the way out of the dark woods. It's scary. I used to walk in forests when I was younger and I used to get scared sometimes because I was like, oh my God, this is like anything could happen here. You know, you're in the sort of like spirits of the forests are around you and jungles, you know? So it's a very, very good place to be. And I think it's a reckoning that we all have to go through. I went through mine for like 6 months and then came out of it and became a speaker because before that, I wasn't doing that at all. And there's also another great book called The Second Mountain. And this is really all about exactly this, is that you climb the first mountain, you get to the first mountain, you realize it wasn't a mountain that you wanted to climb. It's like, this is not my mountain to climb. This is a mountain society told me to climb. My parents told me to climb. I actually found this out when I married a wonderful person. And I realized I married the person my mom wanted me to marry, not the person I wanted to marry. And, you know, they got on like a house on fire, surprise, surprise, because it was her dreams and aspirations that I was fulfilling. And the book in the second mountain says, you climb the first mountain, you realize it's not the mountain you ever wanted to climb. Then what you have to do is you have to become clear that it wasn't the mountain you wanted to climb. Then you have to climb down the mountain, which is so hard because you have to let go of everything that made you and let go of that identity. And this is where the skill comes in and the magic comes in, is as you start to dissolve that identity, you get into the valley of the unknown. You call it the wilderness, the strange new place that we are arriving in, where you don't know yourself, nothing around you makes sense. And everything that you did pre this period of time just doesn't work anymore. And this is very frustrating, especially to men. And look, again, I don't know how women operate. I'm not going to be one to mansplain anything anymore, not in this day and age. But I'm going to tell you as a man, for a man's world, is that this is a very difficult thing to do, to let go of identity of success. But success that's empty. And then you begin the climb towards the second mountain. And when you arrive at the peak of the second mountain, even on the climb up the second mountain, you have a very different energy and you start to realize what it is that who you are, how you're evolving, trusting the process more. So I just want to start off, and I'm not answering any questions. I just want to start off by saying, whoever wrote this message to you, congratulations. This message in itself means that you're heeding the call to passage and it's only a matter of time for you to arrive. So congratulations. I'm getting goosebumps even saying that because it's so spot on to be asking those questions. And many, many people don't. They'll carry on drinking tequila, keep going to clubs, keep finding younger chicks, buying faster sports cars. And all they're doing is expressing to the world the crisis that they're in.
Yeah, very well said, dude. Sure. And there's really a lot to just reflect on in terms of that. And I think I've experienced that in my own life, obviously. And I've turned 40, so I can claim that. I actually want to start exactly at the same point as you, which is to say, well done for the recognition and for having the courage to admit that it's time for a reinvention and that it's time to let go of things. In my keynote, I've been sharing a story about a doctor called Ignaz Semmelweis, and it's such a cool story. In the 1840s, 1846, you have what they call the golden age of the physician scientist. So we are starting to move from thinking that diseases caused by bad air to like starting to understand that, okay, there's some pathology behind it, you know, some like real things happening inside the body.
We used to think that spirits used to be like, there were bad spirits around, yeah. Right? I mean, there was a whole range of things then.
It was this thing called miasma. It was bad vibes, bad air, that kind of thing. And so, but now they start thinking, okay, there's something happening inside the body. We have to figure it out. So you had the golden age of doctors becoming like a scientist, really. And so at this time, Dr. Ignaz Semmelweis, a Hungarian doctor, starts working at the Vienna General Hospital. And in this hospital, you have two different wards. One ward is staffed by midwives and the other ward is staffed by doctors. And in both wards, people are dying all the time after giving birth. And they die from this thing called childbed fever. So he sees this and he recognizes that what's even more interesting is that people are dying at different rates inside of these wards. So in the midwife's ward, ladies are dying at a rate of 2-3%. And in the doctor's ward, they die at a rate of 13-18%. And wow. It's so bad, in fact, that like when women get admitted to the doctor's ward, they plead to be put over to the other ward because they know that in this ward, their chance of dying is like 1 in 5, you know?
Yeah.
So he wants to figure out what's happening. What's the discrepancy here? And he's looking at the two different wards. And the first thing he notices is that in the midwife's ward, ladies are giving birth on their sides. And in the doctor's ward, they give birth on their backs. And so he says to the doctors, make sure that all your patients give birth on their sides. It turns out that makes no difference to the death rate at all. So the second thing he notices is that in the doctor's ward, when someone has died, a priest comes through. And then behind him is someone ringing a bell. And he kind of theorizes that this bell gives people a shock and it puts them into fever. So he's like, okay, priest, you can come through, but no bell. And guess what? Makes no difference at all. And so...
What? Bell fever is not a thing?
Yeah, damn it! A thing.
A bell fever! Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So he sits with it a bit and eventually one of his friends, one of his colleagues, is busy doing a dissection because autopsies were a big thing at that time.
That's right.
So they're doing a dissection and accidentally gets cut by a scalpel. And in the next few days, this colleague falls ill with childbed fever, the exact thing that they were trying to dissect, and he dies. And so for the first time, this Dr. Ignaz Semmelweis goes, well, maybe they actually got sick because of cadaverous particles that got in through the wound. So he's starting to make the connection that, oh, there could be a transmission of some sort that's causing this disease. And like, it sounds strange for us to say that today because to us it's obvious, but you have to remember that in the 1860s, germ theory was only published in 1860. Before that, we didn't know about germs and bacteria and viruses and all these things. So he sees this and he comes up with this like cadaverous particles theory. And then something kicks into place and he goes, in the midwife's ward, no one does any autopsies. All they do is they deliver babies and look after them.
That's right.
In the doctor's ward, all the doctors are doing autopsies, but they don't just do autopsies. They do autopsies and then they go straight from autopsies into delivering babies without washing their hands. And it's like, all of a sudden it starts making sense to him. And then they would go from patient to patient and not wash their hands. And so he institutes this like big policy. He says, okay, moving forward, we wash our hands with a chlorinated lime solution. And he didn't know that the chlorine would actually kill germs. He just thought it would take away the smell of cadavers on your hands.
Right, right.
So they institute this policy. And in April of 1846, by June, the death rate in the doctor's ward had fallen from 13, well, it was actually the high of 18%. It falls from 18% to 2.2%, so the same as the midwife's ward. And then in the months following that, it falls below that. And then for 2 months, they have no deaths in the ward at all. And so like you listen to the story and you go, this is an amazing story about a medical breakthrough that saved thousands of lives. Except it isn't, because very shortly after this, all of the doctors stopped washing their hands again. And the reason they stopped washing their hands was because they were infuriated that this guy was suggesting that they, the doctors, the healers, were somehow responsible for death, that they were the ones causing disease. And the objection that they made was, doctors are gentlemen and a gentleman's hands are always clean. And what this just shows us is that the most potent killer of reinvention, transformation, us starting something new, is defensiveness. You know, and these guys were defending their status and their authority, and it cost thousands of people their lives. And so if we can overcome defensiveness, that's always the first step towards us moving into a new phase of life. And so when I saw this message, my first instinct was, well done, you've already started to let go of your defensiveness. You are not defending an old skill. You are not defending an old identity, but you might still be defending an old belief around what it would take for you to move into a new phase of your life, to move into a newer version of who you are going to be. And so I was kind of like in the same mindset as you, in that the first step of letting go of that defensiveness is incredibly difficult. And to get that right requires a tremendous amount of courage. And if we can't take that step, then we can't progress. We can't move into whatever the new terrain is going to be.
Very good. I like that. I know that story. Glad that you're bringing it back to the surface around it. Whoever wrote this message, first thing I'd say to him is go wash your hands. Second thing I'd say to him, no, okay. So look, I think what we have to realize is that the logical mind was really engaged in the world of fitting into a system, into your career, into your degree, into the identity you developed based on a work title, rather than the identity you've developed based on who you are. And the truth is that who you are doesn't really sit in your head, it sits in your heart. And if you're not doing the work around accessing more of your heart, more of your being, rather than more of your logical thinking, that's always going to be addicted to certainty or an outcome, or have an ego idea of keeping and being addicted to the familiarity of who you are. The heart has different rules. And the emotional body, and we got to realize that your body is broken up into, and I'm sure I've spoken about this before, but you have a spiritual body, a physical body, an emotional body, and a mental body. And if you realize that your emotional body is not the one that's been accessed in the world of understanding your purpose, all we've really done in our 3D material world is we've accessed our physical body and our mental body. We've kind of, like, I don't know, ignored our emotional bodies and spiritual bodies because we didn't think that they were important. But how many people do we know that are super fit and die of cancer? And how many people do we know that are super clever but are always triggered? And so you realize that being that clever and that fit without having the emotional body in play and the spiritual body in play, you really are a very lopsided human being. And I would even far as go in saying people that are super spiritual and that are super into their emotional bodies but do nothing in their physical bodies and fat and like unfit and don't really look after themselves there, and also haven't put any effort into trying to fit into some type of system somewhere, also as useless, because you're just lopsided. So what you want to do is you want to have a variation of accessing all four. And something, a practice that I've been doing quite a lot recently, is in fact accessing each one of these bodies like they're a specific person within me and engaging with those bodies. And then asking yourself, if you go to gym 4 times a week for your physical body and you go to work and you study 6 days a week for your mental body, how are you accessing your emotional body and spiritual body, and how much effort and energy are you putting into those? And if you're not, and the answer would be zero, because that's what our society has done. And so what you want to do is you want to start to access those bodies. And in accessing those bodies, your ability to access your purpose and why you're here become much more obvious. And if I was given the opportunity to start again, I would take on this advice: is break down your growth and your exploration and your curiosity into 4 different personas, and then ask yourself, what am I doing for my emotional body today? And I can tell you, for my emotional body, it's very much about playing the internal dialogue game of making more peace with myself and having less judgment and working on that sort of happy Maya game. For my spiritual body, I'm meditating every day. For my physical body, I'm training every day. For my mental body, I'm working and listening to podcasts and work. So, and when I reach the end of the day, I'm always asking myself, have I touched base on all 4 of my bodies? And sometimes I'm doing something that is too physical. Like, I want to do something that I'm pushing my joy in my physical body, and I feel a little bit guilty. And I say to myself, okay, have you meditated today? Yes. Have you made peace with yourself on these days? Yes. Okay, then carry on. Because I wanted to try and be as balanced as possible. So the silver bullet is the system of accessing all four of your bodies and then allowing that holistic approach to guide you and lead you and pull you into what it is that you're here to do.
Mm. Yeah, I love that. I think it's very practical, you know, because it can feel very overwhelming. I think what he said there was like, I'm standing at the edge with a blank map in front of me. And I think that's exactly kind of the challenge you face when you're busy trying to reinvent yourself into a new version of you, is you don't actually know what that looks like. You are still trying to figure it out. And actually, the only way that you get to figure it out is moment by moment. And so the best way to do the moment by moment thing is to have a bit of a system. And so the four body system is actually perfect for that, because it doesn't require you to have a idealized outcome just yet. You know, like, I think that's one of the challenges when we are busy trying to get to a new place, is we don't always know what that new place looks like. You might have a vague idea, and then the more time you spend going down the path, the more it crystallizes, the more clear it becomes. But initially, that vague direction is actually, it's fine, it's enough. You don't have to obsess about what it's going to be. Rather, focus on the inputs that you're putting into creating the new. And I think of this friend of mine that's been building this AI tool for a while. You know, like when he started, he had no idea what that tool is going to be. He just knew he wanted to build an AI. So he started and he just got busy and he was just learning things. And about a year later, it crystallized into, oh, this is what I'm actually trying to build. So I think it's perfectly fine to have a blank map in front of you. In fact, that is what most of us are dealing with, is that you don't know what the new terrain is. But if you have a system like this that can anchor you into that future by just performing certain actions, and what you are measuring is input, not just output, then I think you're moving in the right direction. We've even mentioned in the pod now a few times, like, don't worry about the amount of views or the amount of listens. Just focus on, can you create more? Can you put more reps in? Can you put more time and effort into it? Like, measure that instead of obsessing over like, oh, has things changed already? So I like the practicality of that system.
Two stories on that. Yesterday, I was speaking to a friend in Dubai about her finding her purpose and her mission. She was like, I haven't asked you this. What's your mission? And I explained to her what my mission. And I said to her, what's your mission? And she was like, I want to do this and this, but it doesn't.
To pet every dog in the world.
Of course, that's top of the priority of missions.
Of course.
Yes, that's both of our missions, not this podcast or speaking. It's pet every dog in the world. But she was like, but my mission doesn't align with my career. Like, I'm a little bit like, I'm stuck. I'm like, you're trying to think too much about it. You're not trying to feel too much about it. And when you start to realize that when you start to access the heart, the way you make decisions start to change, because your only job when you start to access the emotional spiritual body is to keep yourself in a good mood most of the day, if not all of the day. When you stop being in a good mood, your trajectory starts to change and you start to move into more of a negative outcome-based, addicted to certainty sort of idea. When you're in this state of emotional curiosity and you're in this constant state, you actually don't worry about the outcome. And this is an evolved way of living through life without the addiction to certainty, but with your focus 100% of the system of accessing your four bodies. And when I said this to her yesterday on the message, she was like, oh, thank you so much for saying that, because I feel so relieved now. And we realize that our brains are playing this trick on us to continuously know exactly what you're doing, when you're doing it, how you're doing it, what's going to be the outcome of this. And that exhausts us. In fact, it stops us from exploring so many avenues. And, you know, a lot of people's dating bios might say they're spontaneous, but they're really not spontaneous. Their brains don't want them to be flippant spontaneous. You know what I mean? And so what you got to do is your brain must be released and your emotions must be engaged. It has a different set of rules. It's a different type of currency. So access more of that, and then the purpose and the next phase will become so obvious to you. So congratulations for writing the message.
Didn't you say that there were two stories? Did I miss out on one story?
Yes, I did have another story.
Your mission
Yeah, yes. There was another story and I've forgotten it now. Yeah, you're right. All right. Yeah, okay, I'll come back to it. Yeah, you're right. I forgot. Stop being so addicted to certainty, Eric. Just go with the flow, bro. Look at you. Yeah. You're trying to...
I'm just holding you accountable.
Yeah, I forgot about the other story.
If you're going to tell me... If you're going to say two stories, I want to hear two stories. That's all I'm saying.
You're right. I forgot the second story. Damn it. Okay.
I'm advocating for our listeners.
Yes. That's what I'm doing. Sorry for letting you all down. I'm an advocate. Sorry for letting you down.
all right, dude. Listen, I think that's good. I think it's a very timely question because we are all kind of dealing with it. And I think there's sort of layers to it. And that's what we've seen in the pod today is that... There's a much deeper layer to this, which is that there is really an inner recalibration of your identity and that you are moving onto that second mountain and it's really figuring out and coming back to kind of who you are. And it's weird, you know, it really is a journey. And people have so many opinions on this. Like something I often hear is, oh, you need to find out like what you were like when you were 7 or 8 years old. And I'm like, but I don't buy into that because at 7 or 8, I wasn't smart. Like I can't base my adult life on what I was like as a child. It seems like the wrong way to go about it. So people have all these different ideas of like, how do you find yourself when you cross a certain threshold? And I think, you know, some of the books that you mentioned, like The Second Mountain, obviously the work of James Hollis, all that's really good stuff to go and explore and to understand that part of the journey that you're on. But then even if you aren't 40, like if you are 20 and 30, you are dealing with a world that is changing right in front of your eyes. And you have lots of questions whether you are going to be relevant in the world. And so reinvention is top of mind for you most likely too. And I hope that you are able to apply and extrapolate a lot of what we said today into your life as well.
But if for one second you're saying, I think I've already gone through that, sit down. Sit down, lighty.
Uncle John says sit down.
Johan says sit down, little shit. Don't think you're too clever. Like, yeah, you surpass every other human who did it at 40, and you are the only single guy and girl that's made it before 40. So congratulations to you, Chop. That's sweet. That's funny. So if you're a Chop, don't listen to this podcast. Anyway, thank you so much.
I think that was good.
That was great. Thank you, everybody, for joining us again. And if you're going through a bit of change, congratulations. Start to access your different types of bodies. If you don't know what that means, get hold of ChatGPT. It'll give you all the answers. In fact, I was telling my brother, my stepbrother who lives in Czech Republic, he was also going through a bit of change. And he was saying, oh, some people say I must go for therapy, but I don't really want to. I'm like, dude, sign up now and never get off that train. So go for family constellation. You know, if you're adverse to taking mushrooms or ayahuasca, go do family constellations or at least go do therapy. Or I have just hired an AI coach because I'm like, I don't know. I just get a coach. Like I got a coach for relationships. I got a coach for my own internal world. I got a coach for AI now. I've got coaches everywhere. I got a fitness coach. And so just seek them out and look for them. You know, there's teachers everywhere. If you're not seeking, you won't find them. So as Dr. Joe says, if you don't know, there's an invisible web of 99% emptiness waiting for you to give it any direction. That web is invisible to you. It's always invisible to you, but you won't even be able to access it if you don't have a relationship to it. And so what you have to do is first believe that there's something there, and then you get the opportunity to engage with it, just like with your four bodies. If you don't think that there's four bodies in there, it's because you've never engaged with them. And so this is called mind-body connection. And when you do the mind-body connection, you can connect to any part of your body, any aspect of your body, talk to it, engage with it, deal with it like it's something that you want to give instructions to. And it might sound a bit woo-woo, but you know, when people say that to me, I remind them that I travel around the world with a six-pack. So whatever I'm saying must work, because then otherwise it wouldn't really be woo-woo. You know, there was somebody I was speaking to the other day, talking about spiritual arrogance, but here we go. You know, somebody was saying to me the other day, somebody was arguing with me, not arguing with me. They were being intellectually condescending, okay? And they were talking about Dr. Joe, right? And I found it so weird because I make a lot more money than him and I'm in much better shape than him and I'm traveling the world and he's not. And he's arguing with me around my beliefs. And I was like, bro, what? I didn't even want to do this. I'm not arguing with you that you're a Muppet. I'm trying to inspire you to change your behavior and you are now breaking me down. Guess what that is, Eric? Is not letting go of an identity. That's what it is. He can't let go of his identity. And is upset that he's not achieving what I'm achieving. But then whatever I'm doing is a fool's game, according to him. And he's such a lovely, lovely human. But he's so caught up in his identity, he doesn't know how to let go of it. And like he's stuck, you know, because he's only ever accessed his mental body and physical body, never accessed his spiritual and emotional body. That stuff's woo. Well, then, woo-woo, shmoo-moo, I'm flying first class. Ciao. Anyway, everybody, thanks so much for joining us on the Expansive Podcast.